morning, Carolyn.
Good morning.
I am speaking now with Carolyn Grant, who is a co-editor of a new anthology called Mama PhD, along with her co-editor, Elrina Evans. And Carolyn Grant, according to your little bio, spent nearly 3 years writing a dissertation that about seven people read. That's very funny.
Right.
Very self-deprecating. You're now a senior editor of Literary Mama. That's literarymama.com. And you write a monthly movie column as well, and you hold a PhD in comp lit. So tell us about the origins of this anthology, Mama PhD. Did the book grow out of talking with women about their experiences raising children in academia?
Well, all through my graduate education, I had looked for role models. I had looked for women who were raising children to see, how they did it, what was working and what wasn't. My sister was probably my most significant role model. She's 6 years older, and I sort of tracked her progress through graduate school and into motherhood. And she actually has an essay in the book called "I Am Not a Head on a Stick."
Which one is your sister? What's her name?
She's Libby Gruner.
Ah.
But the book itself, I think women of a certain age are always talking to each other about how they're going to do what they want to do, right? How are we going to mm-hmm. have the career we want? How are we going to have the family that we want? I actually didn't have children in graduate school. I filed my dissertation, and I got married one summer, and then started my family a year and a half, 2 years after that. But the particular book, this specific project, started with a very particular conversation I was having with Elrina, who had submitted an essay to the section I was editing of Literary Mama at the time. And her essay referred sort of obliquely to her experience having a baby while she was in graduate school, trying to decide how this was all going to work, writing her dissertation. And she said in an email one day, "I think I might want to write a whole book about this." Mm-hmm. And I just jumped on it. I said, "That's a great idea. And in fact, let's do it."
And that's how it began. It strikes me that it's an essay anthology with a really wide range of women. There are women that have decided not to have children. Yeah. There are women that made it through to tenure while getting pregnant and raising children. There are children like yourself who have left academia.
Right.
I mean, did I just call you a child?
You called me a child. That's okay.
Isn't that wonderful? Okay. There are
I'll
children like yourself.
By that.
Yeah, this is good. So this would be like baby PhD is kind of the anthology I'm thinking of. So, it strikes me that the body, which is such a fundamental part of pregnancy, obviously, and then raising a toddler. I mean, you don't get more primal than that.
Right.
Is often a topic of, abstract discourse and stuff for people in academia. But then you get into the actual parenting and slam, bam, you're
right
in a whole other realm.
Right. Well, and I think all of our essayists talk about that in one way or the other. One in particular, Martha Crone, writes, her essay is called "One of the Boys." And she writes about making it through to a certain point in grad school as one of the few women in her program, and she always thought that, her best way through was to be one of the boys. And she could always, she could hang with the boys, she could drink with the boys, and then she got pregnant. And she it really just hit her full force. Oh, I'm not one of the boys. And in fact, good for me, I'm glad I'm not. But that's also why, people have asked us why this isn't parent PhD, why we limited it to mother's stories. And that's why, that even though culturally things are shifting very slowly and mothers and fathers share the work of parenting, biologically it's still all on women. And a lot of the things that, the kinds of breaks parents need are really the kinds of breaks mothers need to get over, to recover from, the physical burden of parenting.
It's very interesting. In your introduction, you remind people that the disproportion, I'm quoting here, between male and female university faculty, as in other workforces, is most striking among those who choose to be both professors and parents. And you have a kind of vision that you lay out. In fact, at the end of the book, there's a momifesto. You talk about all working mothers, regardless of their educational level or professional status, should be entitled to on-site childcare, flexible policies, and so forth. What are the policies of most universities?
Oh, they vary. And even if there is some kind of university-wide policy, enforcement or support, depending on your perspective, for those policies really varies. So just to speak to the case I know best, I was an adjunct professor at Stanford University when I became pregnant. I actually got the job and found out I was pregnant the same week.
Hmm.
And
it never rains, it pours.
Yeah, exactly. It's like tons of good news all at once. And my department chair was incredibly supportive. She was delighted for me. But she also said, I don't have a clue what your rights are here. So I spent every free minute when I was on campus, when I wasn't meeting with students, when I wasn't in class, calling around to the benefits people. And, of course, no one quite knew. You know, there were certain policies in place for lecturers and certain policies in place for professors, and things changed whether or not you were tenured. And so I discovered that I would earn maternity leave if I stayed on the job 6 months, and that put me to 2 weeks before my due date. So I sort of crossed my fingers and hoped for the best that I wouldn't deliver early, and I made lots of contingency plans. But the policies are really ad hoc, and then people often, even if there are good policies in place at a lot of schools, people are not so much punished, but shunned or thought less of if they take the leave that they've earned, mm-hmm. but sue them.
And the Family Medical Leave Act, I was startled to read the detail that you have to pay for your own insurance during that. But, so some of our listeners might be thinking, okay, and I'm sure you get this question at readings, how is this different? Is this different in any way from other professions that require a lot of rigorous hours and mm-hmm. a kind of workaholism, becoming a lawyer, becoming a doctor?
Right.
What's the difference? Why this book, in a way?
Right. Well, I think the culture of academia is a little bit different. To be fair, it's the workplace that I know best. I've never tried to become a lawyer or a doctor. But there is this emphasis on, there's this the front-loading of the career, for one thing, during the exact years that most people are wanting to start a family, but also this emphasis on your one unique individual brain, and no other brain can do this work.
Hmm.
There's not, even though, my career now, I work so collaboratively. I couldn't do the writing and the editing I do without the input and the reflection of the other writers and editors I work with. There's a sense in the academy that, only you can do this work. Only you can teach this class. There's very little job sharing. And I think that really could open up.
That's very interesting, what you just said, very little job sharing. So you can't easily get someone to take on your courses or a TA who will take over. That's frowned upon, I suppose.
In my case, I did sort of parcel out, one colleague covered one class and another colleague covered another class, because I did wind up taking my maternity leave. Well, I taught on Friday and my son was born Monday. There were 2 weeks of the quarter still that I had arranged for, and a film was shown in class one time. But again, this is all sort of ad hoc and people making arrangements individually, and there's no institutional sort of university-wide support for this at most places.
Some of your writers also recount some astonishing visceral reactions that mostly men seem to have to their pregnant female colleagues, like almost a revulsion or a kind of, or people saying things like, you know, well, that's it for you, you know, no tenure for you, or sort of assuming that you're not as serious about your goals.
Right, right, that you're sort of descending now into the world of motherhood and, you know, we won't see you again and your brain's all going to go to mush. And, I encountered that. Elrina certainly encountered that. And, you know, it's really a shame because I think all of us would argue that motherhood makes us better teachers, makes us better collaborators. You know, we're more patient, we can get more done on less sleep. I think, you know, we have more to offer.
I don't recall, Carolyn, but is there any author in the book, I'm just not remembering right now, who adopted?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because I had a question that was put in my head to represent to you from my sister, who's in academia, Susan Bordeaux. And she...
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And...
I know her work.
Good. Yeah.
Yes.
And so she, you know, obviously she's got these books on cultural philosophy and feminism and the Unbearable Weight book. What she did was she waited. I mean, I don't know that this was calculated in any way. We're not a family that's very calculated about our life trajectories. You know,
we
three sisters are kind of late bloomers all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this idea, like you said, about front loading, you know, it's kind of in your 20s and 30s is when you are expected to be getting the career down, but also the childbearing years. So anyway, she authorized me to be able to say this on the air.
Okay.
At 52, she adopted a child. Uh-huh. And that's my very precious niece, Cassie, who's now around 10. Uh-huh. And so by that point, she was tenured. She was an endowed chair. And I guess she wanted to put forth the idea or see what you thought about the idea that it's another option for women who become so attached to the idea of having a biological child, you know, which does bring with it the long pregnancy and all the physicality.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, she has graduate students that come to her with this dilemma, and she often tries to mention this, that
right.
is another way to go.
Sure.
Not that it makes you any less wrapped up in parenting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And not that it's a less complicated or necessarily less fraught route to parenting. Because so the essayist who adopted is named Rosemarie Emanuel. And she actually is one of our contributors. We have a daily blog over at InsideHigherEd.com. And a number of the contributors to the book are continuing to write posts Inside Higher Ed and sort of keep this conversation going. Rosemarie adopted, and her situation was that she, in the first semester of her first tenure track job, discovered she had a brain tumor.
Oh, that was that essay. That's right.
Yeah. So she spent her tenure years, you know, trying to hang on to her job and trying to hang on to her life. And then I can't remember now if she started the adoption process before she'd earned tenure or not. And she writes, you know, quite poignantly about, well, both, you know, the practical logistics of trying to wrangle some kind of leave from her university and sort of working out a new policy that she hopes, you know, can continue to be a workable policy for all parents, you know, birth parents, adoptive parents. But, you know, she also writes really movingly about, you know, adoptions that fell through at the last minute.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly that's a world fraught with, you know, both joys and terrible disappointments and things like that.
Yeah. But you know, parenting maybe is.
One of the things that goes like a theme throughout the book is that it's really hard to focus and concentrate with a toddler around. Like when you're doing intense intellectual work that they do require, you know, a lot of focus and attention. And then in Erin Haney's chapter, Motherhood After Tenure, she writes, even with the confidence of a tenured chair, I feel anxious about the work that isn't getting done, just as I feel guilty about the hours I spend away from my daughter. In truth, I feel, and I thought this was very honest, I feel guiltier about my work, perhaps because I've been in academia longer than I've been a mom, and it still feels like cheating to prioritize my personal life.
Right, right. And maybe to get back to your question about why this culture is different than the culture of law or medicine or corporate culture, the work never leaves. You know, there's always, you know, you can always be working on your research. You can always be, you know, working on your syllabus or developing a new class. And we're trained from the time we start grad school to just pour ourselves so thoroughly, so completely into this work and leave everything else behind and make this work our everything. And so it is very hard to come out of that and be a parent and, you know, and have these other fabulous claims on your time and your attention. I was downstairs half an hour ago and my almost 4-year-old was saying, Mama, why can't you have your interview here with me?
Oh, my gosh. Is he available? We could have him say a few words.
I think better not. I think maybe better not. He might be listening in from the computer downstairs. You're listening, Eli. Hi.
Hi, Eli. And let's say hello to the other one.
Ben.
Hi, Eli and Ben. Welcome to WPKN Bridgeport. We have a lot of children that actually listen in our listening audience.
Well, they love the music you were playing. We fired it up around 7.
Oh, I'm glad you were able to get the internet stream.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's working for us.
Wonderful. So children, academia, what would be your advice? And I know this is a tough question to say a young woman who is trying to raise children and succeed in her academic career. Are there any things that your wisdom can offer her of how to try to keep things in balance?
My best advice is find people who are doing it too. You know, find colleagues in your department or on campus, and if nobody is visibly doing it, you know, post a note on your department listserv or the grad student listserv or the new faculty listserv, and just try and find other people in the same boat, because that makes a world of difference. I had one colleague at Stanford, Mary Ruth Marant, who was pregnant with twins, and she was ABD. She was working on her dissertation. She was teaching with me. She was pregnant. And just to have somebody else who is, you know, going through it with you, I think is tremendous. It helps so much sort of emotionally and personally. And then also know your rights. spend a lot of time calling around the human resources or the benefits department if you're expecting a child or trying to start a family, and find out exactly, you know, what the university can do for you, what kind of policies it has in place, and make sure that, you know, you can take advantage of whatever leave or benefits that they have. A lot of people just don't know or are scared to take the benefits that are available to them. But if you have a friend or if you have a colleague who's in the same position, you know, it all sort of feeds on itself.
Do you remember the anthology that was hot a few years ago called The Bitch in the House?
Yeah.
And then that was followed up by The Bastard on the Couch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what about a follow-up volume, Papa PhD?
That's in the works.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
It's not my project. Arena and I are doing other things. But in fact, my Stanford colleagues, and I mentioned Mary Ruth Murat, who's a professor at the University of Central Arkansas now, is with one of her colleagues putting together a collection. Because she, when the book first came out, she organized an event, and in fact, Erin Haney went down to UCA, and they had a reading and a panel discussion. And people were so charged up to talk about these issues, and I guess there were particularly a good number of dads on the panel or at the presentation. And so they decided, yeah, this is the natural follow-up, and I agree. I'm thrilled that they're doing it.
Because as I learned from some people that I work with, that in terms of that advice for the young woman, you know, having a supportive, involved partner is incredibly wonderful, but also a partner who he himself is often or sometimes involved in the academic struggle, and you may be at different stages of your career.
Right.
You know, because for academics, the pursuit of tenure with its pressure to publish and keep that going is kind of a unique phenomenon, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I think obviously in law firms you want to make partner, quote unquote. You know, there's lots of corollaries, but there is something particular to that whole thing. And I'm sure that the men who are taking an increasingly more active role in parenting would have a lot of the same feelings as some of the women writing in your book.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know, I mean, we have several contributors whose partners are also in academia. Jamie Warner, Libby Gruner, Jennifer Cunyard Black, many of us. But also, nothing's going to change until these issues matter to fathers, too. And I know they do matter to a lot of fathers, to most fathers, but it's, still, we're not quite at the point where it's culturally okay for them to agitate for the rights that they're due.
Where it's not okay for the fathers to agitate.
Yeah, I think it's not, and again, because, somebody can look at a pregnant woman and understand that she might need some rest or she might need to take 6 weeks or preferably 6 months off after she has her child and understands maybe about nursing 2 hours a day when you've got a newborn. I'm thinking about Alrina right now because she has a six-day-old baby. So I know she's right in the thick of it right now.
Hi, Alrina.
Hi, Alrina.
She's your co-editor in this volume.
Yes, just delivered her third child, a baby boy. But, I think things won't change until people realize that things need to change for parents, not just moms.
Well, Carolyn, I know you have to go take Eli and Ben to school.
I got to go drive the carpool.
So, classic example. I want to thank you. We've been talking with Carolyn Grant, co-editor of the volume Mama PhD, out from Rutgers University Press. And mention some of your websites, if you would.
Yes. We've got a website with a ton of information about the book, which is just www.mamaphd.com. And then I'm also the editor-in-chief now of Literary Mama, literarymama.com. So I'd be thrilled if your listeners find their way to our website.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sure they will. And you also mentioned InsideHigherEd.com.
Yes. Several of our contributors, Erin Haney, Rosemary Emanuel, Libby Gruner, Dana Campbell, a number of our writers also blog every day over at InsideHigherEd.com, and the blog there is called Mama PhD.
Beautiful. Well, you got to make that carpool, and I'll send this too now to everyone in the book, one way or another, and especially to your co-editor. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Great. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
WPKN Bridgeport and WPKM Montauk.